host Andy Mitz. Today we have a little bit different from what we normally do. I actually recently got in touch with Keith Glass, an NBA agent, done a bunch of other things. He is the author of a new book called 7 Foot Man Eating Chicken. It's a collection of stories about some well-known individuals in the NBA and his interactions with them. Keith, did I do the book justice?
I'm shocked. You did a terrific intro. Very good, Andy.
So we have Keith here with us. We're going to talk a little bit about this book. It actually features quite prominently some stories about Larry Brown specifically. And so we wanted to kind of talk about some of that. I do think that even, you know, most Kansas fans that don't necessarily follow the NBA very well will find this book extremely interesting, because I think it intersects a lot with what's happening now in college. But Keith, I do want to ask you, this is not your first book. You did write another book, Taking Shots, probably about, I think it was about 10, 11 years ago. Given what you say in the intro to this book, it doesn't sound like you came out of the experience of the first book wanting to go ahead and write another book. So what was it that made you want to write this book?
Well, yeah, that's a very good question. This one was much more personal. The first book, I was speaking at a law school, and an editor from HarperCollins, which is one of the biggest publishing houses in the country, was in the audience, heard me speaking and telling stories. And long story short, they actually commissioned me to write the first book. So I did it. I had no intention of writing either book. This one specifically, I've written basically for myself and for my own family. My dad was Larry Brown's, basically his father. My mom was his adopted mother, back in New York. This, it goes way back, like 50, 60 years ago. So, the book's not about Larry. The book's more about, my family and the interactions that we've had, and things happened with Larry over the years that I felt, my dad's voice, he's not with us anymore. And I felt like he needed to be heard. And so that's the short version of why I wrote it.
Yeah. And you talk about your dad's voice, and specifically, I've read about half the book at this point that we're recording the interview, and I fully intend to finish it in the next day or two. But, the story talking about Larry Brown, it definitely seems to go from, it's not really necessarily a story about you, but it's a story about your dad and Larry and how they've interacted and kind of how everything went through that. I mean, I came into this after reading the introduction thinking that you were, going to be talking a lot about what you personally experienced for probably the entire book. And then that entire first section where you do talk about Larry Brown, obviously there's some interaction with you because you are involved in all of this. But it definitely seems to be a lot more talking about the influence that your dad had, and how he kind of shaped the interaction that you have with the NBA,
right,
and with Larry Brown.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. And I think here's what I get out of it. It's really funny because my dad and I had been through Lawrence, Kansas many times when Larry was coaching there. And really the basis of this was that my dad did things for Larry that most people would not even believe in terms of the effort, the time, and really the love that he had. Larry was part of our family. There's no getting around it. Right. My mom and dad passed away within a year of each other. Suffice it to say that in both their death notices, Larry's listed as their son, not as an adopted son, not as anything else. So the way things went down at the end of my dad's life, through Larry and through Mike Woodson, who's also chronicled in the book, the former Knicks coach and, great Indiana player, I felt was disrespectful to my dad. My dad is not here to speak for himself, and so I did the talking.
Yeah, and that kind of seems to be, if there is an overall theme to the book, at least from what I've seen so far, it seems to be talking about kind of the tone that the sport in general, from the college level all the way up to the NBA, has kind of taken. That it's not about respecting the game anymore. It's about the flashiness. It's about the over the top, you know, making it an entertainment event as opposed to a game of basketball. You know, that seems to be featured pretty prominently in the book, and it seems like that kind of carries over a lot into a lot of the interpersonal stories that are coming through as well. Does that sound about fair?
Yeah, I think that's very fair. I look, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. The name of the book, 7-Foot Man-Eating Chicken, like, what is that about? Well, what it's about, first of all, I stole that from P.T. Barnum. He had an exhibit in Manhattan called the 6-Foot Man-Eating Chicken. He sold tickets, 25 cents a piece, that were wrapped around his museum to get in. He advertised for months. And when you got in, you know, they were waiting for this 7-foot chicken that was a man eater. And you walked in and there was a 6-foot tall man sitting in a chair eating chicken. Right. So sometimes what is advertised is not what you get. And I feel that that's the case in professional sports today. This concept that it's entertainment, I've rejected. The concept that it's just a business, I've rejected. Doesn't mean I'm right. You know, I railed about it in my first book. Obviously, nobody listened because everything has exponentially gone up. So, but it doesn't mean I'm wrong. It just means that it just keeps going. So there are a lot of things that may appear a certain way, but when you really get down to it, that's not the way it is. So yeah, I do go into it, and it's a weird position. It's a juxtaposition for me, in that I've made a very nice living for my family, for 34 years being an NBA agent. I've had 110 NBA clients, you know, another 120 in Europe, and so I've done very nicely. But it doesn't make it right. I mean, if people want to pay me, that's fine. But at least I can tell them what I think.
Right, right. You are getting paid to help people navigate the system. That does not mean that you're condoning the way the system actually operates. And I think that's
exactly right.
Yeah, and important distinction that, you know, I mean, me being a huge college basketball fan, and personally, I have a hard time getting into the NBA a lot, partly, I think, because I never had a natural connection to any of the individual teams.
Right.
But I mean, you know, I'm seeing the same sort of thing in college, is that, you know, like, I absolutely love college basketball, but to you know, having just gone through a huge process with one of our players, Silvio De Souza, you know, going through a huge ordeal because of amateurism and all of that. Like, I definitely can't condone the way the system is set up, even though I enjoy watching the games. And I do think that that's what you're talking about. You're not talking about the actual sport itself. What you're talking about is the business that's built itself up around it, that in some cases seems to be eating away at the game that we all
love. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have said that much better. You ought to write your own book there, Andy. But the point is well taken, is that, look, I love basketball, okay? I'm entitled also to critique it, and I'll tell you why. I coached for 16 years as the head coach of high school basketball teams. I made 17 cents an hour. I figured it out one day. I have given my blood, sweat, and tears to high school basketball. It was the purest form that I could find. And I backed it up. This is not just talk from me. I've done it. But I would go from negotiating a $17 million contract at 1 o'clock, and, you know, doing whatever I had to do to get that money, and then driving down the street to modern day high school and coaching kids and telling them, you've got to be unselfish. The game is an unselfish game. You got to care about your teammates. It was a very bipolar type of existence I led there. But I'm not against basketball. I'm not against money. I'm against excess. And clearly, what's gone on now in college, in the NBA, and now dipping down into high school even, it's an excess. It's completely out of whack. You know, I listen, and you didn't ask me this, but I'll tell you anyway. I have a lot of respect, for example, for Jay Billis, who does the college games on TV. He's a very bright guy, and I have a lot of respect for him. He wants the players paid because there's so much money. My issue is, it's too much money for everybody. Right. Just because you're overpaying everybody in college, starting with the NCAA and in the billions, that doesn't mean that because that's insane, you should now permeate the rest of the industry with, or the rest of the sport, with more insanity. To me, we have gotten so far away from, you know, what the point of sports were. This wasn't what it was supposed to be about. And this latest situation, and I know the Kansas people are, who are listening, are probably very in tune, you know, to the FBI investigation. And really, it does go to the heart of what I'm trying to say, maybe inartfully, but I have friends who have been on both sides of that FBI probe. Guys who've never cheated, guys who have cheated. How is that the same sport? How do guys that have cheated compete against the guys that haven't, and their records are swelling, their salaries are swelling? It's crazy. It makes no sense. So to me, I felt like I need to say things about it, and that's what I do.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely agree. I do agree that there's a way too much money that is in all of the sports, honestly. I mean, if you think about what is it that you know, the NBA or the NFL or any of the big sports leagues, what value do they actually add to the society at large? And when you take a look at it from that lens, you know, the amount of money that we pour into them, yeah, it's a lot of entertainment. It allows people to escape from, you know, their mundane everyday lives in some cases, and find enjoyment in you know, watching other people come together as a team and strive to beat the opponent. But,
right,
I mean, when we're talking about how much money is involved, can we actually justify that much money being involved? And I definitely understand that sentiment. Of course, it also means, like, you know, I think now that the money's there, obviously it's going to be pretty much impossible to get it out of there. So the question is, what do you do about it at that point?
Well, yeah, but to me, the frustration is this. What you just said is 100% correct. You know, Tony Kornheiser is a childhood friend of mine, and is one of my older brother's best friends, my brother Brett. And my brother was the director of the American History Museum at the Smithsonian in Washington. Tony and I were there. They were honoring my brother, and Tony turned to me when they were honoring Brent, and he said, "Keith, you know what? People know us, and we do nothing." He said, "Your brother has accomplished things, and no one knows who he is. And there are people listening to me now who are teachers. My daughter's a teacher. They got to fight like dogs to get paid. And their contribution is way beyond a shooting guard on a basketball team, don't you think?"
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So we're out of whack. So in deference to Jay Billis, it's not about continuing this. It's more about getting a grip on it. And maybe, you know, maybe you're right. You probably are, that it's hard to put the genie back in the bottle, but you can try.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that there's a reason to try to fight to get to that. Unfortunately, you know, I think I do think that if we take it as granted that, you know, the money is in the sport and we're not going to be able to get it out, which I don't know if we necessarily should take that for granted, but I do agree then that we need to make sure that everybody who is, you know, creating that value is sharing in it.
I understand that, and I really do. My argument is, priority-wise, you know, you're going to compare the value generated by a basketball player, by a football player, by a baseball player, compared to a fireman, a policeman, a teacher. I mean, come on. I mean, you got to be kidding. So until that gets into some type of sanity, I mean, should it really cost $11.50 to get a hot dog at an NBA game? I mean, really? You know, come on. Water, like, you know, I'm not poverty struck. I won't buy water at a game. I won't do it. It's $5.
Yeah.
It's 41 cents at Costco. I go there.
Yep.
You know, like, at some point, come on, it's enough. And I do have a problem. I have a problem with everybody taking advantage of the system. And I've done it. Look, I'm going to keep doing it. If you let me, I'm going to keep doing it.
Yep. All right. Well, so I do want to get kind of to some of the stories that are in the book and all of that.
Okay.
I do need to go ahead and throw us to a quick break. We will be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right. For those of you that might just be joining us for whatever reason in the middle of this podcast episode, I am talking with Keith Glass. He's the author of the new book, 7 Foot Man-Eating Chicken. It's a book filled with his thoughts about the way that the sports entertainment industry is set up now. And kind of some of the stories that he has gotten along the way. Specifically, I do want to now turn my attention to the Larry Brown. You have several chapters here that kind of go through your dad's experiences with Larry Brown and your experiences with Larry Brown. The one thing that I didn't actually see in here, which is probably because it's not strictly NBA related, is were there any stories that didn't make it into the book, crazy things that happened or, you know, interesting stories from his time at Kansas?
God, Kansas is, well, first of all, you know, the way Danny Manning got there and his dad was obviously an interesting story. But Kansas was pretty straightforward for Larry, to be honest with you. You know, no matter what,
knowing all the crazy things that happened around Larry that when he was at Kansas, that was pretty straightforward.
Well, for Larry, it was pretty straightforward. I know that there were issues at the end. You know, he's been to 3 schools. There have always been issues at the end. I was an assistant to Larry for 2 years that he was at UCLA. So I know up close, you know, what Larry gets into. Larry's issues usually revolve around staying and leaving, you know, and that's a problem. But in terms of stories from Kansas, we were out there several times. But honestly, and in nothing crazy that I could think of, I will tell you this, that I met Larry when I was 7 in the mountains of Pennsylvania at a basketball camp. And my introduction to him was that I lied to him. I was sitting at his table because he was my brother's counselor, and everybody had to eat vegetables at Larry's table. Larry was preaching the right way 60 years ago. Okay. And I lied and told him that I was allergic to peas. I couldn't eat them. And when my parents came up for visiting day, you know, I had said to Larry, look, I'll eat them, but I'm going to blow up like a balloon. This is when I was 8, maybe. And Larry went and apologized to my father. And my father said, what are you talking about? He's not allergic to anything. And that was my first kind of contest with Larry. I won that one, but not all of them.
Oh, that's even better. So, all right. So, one of the other, in terms of where I've actually, read to yet, or at this point, you talk about Matt Maloney and kind of going through and getting him to the NBA and you know, getting him onto that Houston Rockets team. But I don't actually have any questions specifically about him, but I guess my real question is, given the way that this book kind of comes together, what made you pick out the individual players and coaches and people that you represented to bring into this book to kind of tell this story?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that because, you know, it's hard to even, you know, say with anything specific how it happens. I think there is a paragraph in there where I actually do address my guys who aren't in these books because most of them, you know, were just terrific, straight up guys. And so was Matt Maloney. But the ones that make a book are the ones that are either funny, or interesting. You know, Lloyd Daniels has a couple of chapters and Lloyd is different. Matt Maloney, what I tried to do in the book, and I think I succeeded at least this far, is that I didn't want to write about anything as a reporter. I wanted to write about something. Everything has to have a nexus to me. I write about the national anthem in the last chapter, which you haven't gotten to. But, you know, what do I have to do with the national anthem, you could say? And the truth is I represented Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf right. 20 years ago before Colin Kaepernick took a knee. So there's a nexus to me, and I'm entitled to have that opinion. With Matt Maloney it's a poignant story. First of all, the Maloney chapters are not really about just about Matt Maloney. Right. It's about the history of the our union, you know, in the NBA. Goes back to Oscar Robertson and Will Chamberlain and Elgin Baylor and Tommy Heinsohn forming the union. You know, I use each case to kind of make another piece of information available. So Matt Maloney's deal, and the reason he's in there, or one of the reasons, was that when I signed Matt, he was in the minor league. We put him in the minor leagues. Today that'd be the G League. And his father, Jim, who was a tremendous guy and a assistant coach to John Chaney at Temple for 21 years. So it was the family's dream that Matt would make the NBA. And we were getting close. And Jim had a massive heart attack on the Ben Franklin Bridge in Philadelphia and passed away on the bridge. And that was a month before we had put him with the Houston Rockets in their summer league. And so the book kind of goes through what that process is like, both from a personal and a professional level. And look, I hopefully it's interesting. Hopefully it's funny. You know, Andy, the first book, you know, I sound very serious. You know, I'm against the business. I'm against entertainment. I love entertainment. I just don't think it has to be, you know, in the middle of a game. Right. But my, you know, the first book, for example, was nominated for the James Thurber Award for American Humor, and it was a sports book. So, you know, I try to get my shots in there through humor if I can.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's kind of, you know, you were talking about the Matt Maloney and kind of how you were looking at all these other things. And I mean, just looking through those particular chapters, you know, you have an aside where you talk about LeVar Ball and all the, you know, everything he brings, all that attention he brings to himself. You talk about the kind of that history of the union, how that was set up, how it was actually essentially came to be at that All-Star game, and kind of the evolution of that and how it feeds into this. And so, yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like these experiences you have are really framing kind of your own reactions and your own thoughts about how the league does work and how it should work and kind of how all of this actually should happen.
I did the best I could.
Definitely, the one thing I can definitely say is that there is not a dull moment in this entire book. You know,
well, that's nice to hear.
I imagine, you know, just from what I've read so far, I imagine coming to this book is basically sitting down in a room with you and striking up a conversation, and then you just talking about, you know, kind of learning more about what you've been through, and you're just telling people about all the stories and all the fun things that you've done. And, you know, I mean, it gives me that same feeling. Before my grandfather died, I had an opportunity with my mom to sit down with him and interview him about his life, for all the genealogy work that she does. And she actually has tape recordings of her and myself talking with him and asking questions and hearing all these stories about what he's done, you know, and I got the same kind of feeling when I'm reading this book. It's sitting down with you and talking with you about all the different things that you've done, all the experiences and all the lessons that you've learned along the way.
Well, Andy, that's really nice of you to say. And
I can't think of a better way to read about some of the different things that we have going on, you know, in the sport, in the entertainment industry, you know, all of this, and kind of how this feeds into what we really should be thinking about.
I appreciate it. And again, it is true. I mean, I couldn't have scripted that any better, but, you know, I want people to understand it is fun. It's still sports. And, you know, hopefully people laugh. I used to say all the time, if you don't laugh out loud five times, I'll give you your money back. And it's really not about the money. I want people to read it because they want to learn from it and they want to laugh at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I definitely think it really does accomplish that. So for those of you guys that are listening, I definitely do recommend this book very highly. You know, I learned a lot about kind of the history of the NBA. I learned a lot about kind of all the different topics surrounding it. And I do think that you talking as an NBA agent and having kind of that inside look, it really does add a lot to the context of, you know, these things. One thing I thought that came off really well was, you know, at first I was wondering why you were including full articles about some of the things that actually happened here. But then, you know, as I went and read them, it's like I remember reading some of these things and thinking about how stupid some of this stuff was and how ridiculous it was. And I can't believe, you know, that this stuff was happening. And then back and rereading these articles in the book, like, it just adds even more to the hilarity and to the ridiculousness of some of the situations that are happening. And so, you know, it definitely adds a lot, like you were saying, you know, not wanting to be a reporter, but more talking about the personal experiences and kind of trying to bring people into those experiences. I think it matches that very, very well. So,
well, thanks, Andy. I really appreciate it. I really do.
So I do have just one more question for you, because I noticed in the early parts of it, you're talking about what was happening with the FBI probe. And obviously, it seems like this went to publication as it was just getting started and we didn't really know anything about what was happening there. I'm curious to know if you were writing, you know, one additional chapter, is there anything that jumps out from the FBI probe that's come to light during the trials that you think needed to be in the book or kind of talked about in the book?
I don't think it needed to be in the book, but if I had to review the FBI trials, the word I would use would be disappointing. It seemed to be, when they came out, I remember sitting in my office with my sons who work with me, and we said, whoa, this is okay. They got them. They figured it out. This is really going to blow the lid off. And it really hasn't. You know, even though you can see how seedy it is from testimony, it's still, I don't think they're close to what really goes on and how widespread it is. Well, and so it's disappointing.
And I don't think that's because they don't necessarily have the information. I think it's because of the case that they were trying to make required the schools themselves to be the victims.
And it's a very weird case.
Yeah, I think in some cases, like, you know, I don't think that the schools were necessarily as involved directly in it as a lot of people seem to think, except for a few cases. But I do think it speaks to, you know, this has been happening all over the place. It's a generally accepted part of the college landscape now, is that, you know, these are being run by shoe companies, that money is changing hands, and that the schools don't necessarily have to get involved.
Andy, I think what you're saying in your own way is it's a 7-foot man-eating chicken.
Yeah, it sounds like it is.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know what? That is the perfect way to end it. So, Keith, thank you so much for joining us today. For those of you guys listening, again, you know, when does the book come out, Keith?
June 4th. It's on Amazon for pre-order. It's on Barnes & Noble for pre-order, and it's doing pretty good. And that's not even that big a deal. You know, it was just fun to write. I hope everybody likes it.
I was going to say, you actually had said there was one part at the beginning of the book where I forget who it was you were talking to, but was asking you why you were writing the book.
Right.
And, you know, he was asking, you know, are you doing it because you want the money? And you're like, no, I'm just writing because I want to say something. And
yeah,
you know, that's really what it comes down to, is that you have a lot to say, and it's definitely interesting to hear it.
Thanks, Andy.
Obviously, the money is a good side effect of that, but it definitely, you can tell just by reading it that really the main purpose of this was to tell these stories, to give people your thoughts on what the situation is like at this point. So.
Absolutely right. Thanks again, Andy. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Keith.
All right, man. Take care.
Have a good one. And that'll do it for tonight's episode. Thank you so much to Keith Glass for joining us. Like we said during the interview, that book will be available June 4th. I will include links to the Amazon and Barnes & Noble links on the show notes. But, you know, this is a little bit different than what we normally do, but I thought it was interesting enough. And it was, you know, at least was related enough to Kansas with Larry Brown as kind of the tie-in there. But, you know, it does relate to a lot of the things that we've been talking about here on the podcast and over on Rock Chalk Talk, just kind of about the state of where we are as an entertainment industry for the sport and all of that. You know, so I think it's definitely a conversation that needs to be had. I think it's, you know, a good look into some of the issues that are surrounding it. And I definitely recommend this. So But that will do it for today's episode. Thank you guys so much for listening today. If you have not already, you can find us on wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. If you please could go out there, give us a review, you know, 5 stars, nice comments, all that fun stuff. It really does help to get the podcast out there. But thank you guys again so much for listening. I do not have an update on KU-specific results or anything like that. We will be talking a little bit about all of that and some of the recent recruiting news in an episode, in some episodes that will be coming next week. But all right, that will do it for us here today. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will catch you next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.